What's up, everybody? I have got the man with the master plan over at Go Hunt on the mic today, Lorenzo Sartini. What's up, dude? It's your first time on the podcast.
It is the first time on the pod. Happy to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Have you, I would imagine you've done a few podcasts before, but I didn't actually check. Have you been on a few before?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I've been on quite a few, and then we do our own as well.
Yeah, I knew you guys. I've listened to a few of your guys. I usually don't listen to many podcasts, to be honest. When you do them all the time, it's not like I'm like, I can't wait to listen to a podcast.
I agree. It's kind of difficult to, I mean, when you're eating up that much time to record one, it's kind of hard to find the flip side of time to go listen to one on the back end. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know if you're like this, but I do so many. I can't even remember what the hell I say. On a podcast, any good or bad. Like, I've had people very happy with what I've said and also very, very mad. And I'm like, look, dude, I don't remember. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not copping out. I just don't remember what the hell I said. So I got to go back and listen.
Yeah. Yep. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So with, I didn't really write anything down because I never do, but I guess the first question is, you know, what made you start Go Hunt? Like, obviously some people want to be doctors, lawyers, hunters, firemen.
Yep.
Like, what, why Go Hunt? And what age did you kick that off? And you know, how long has it been going on? That kind of stuff.
Yep. So it's a good question. So from a young age, I've always felt very fortunate. Well, my personality, I've always been very good at making a decision and going to it, not ever looking in the rearview mirror kind of a thing. And my personality is I'm stubborn as it gets. Ask my dad and my brother. I drive them fucking nuts every time we get in conversations because I'm so stubborn. But that comes in handy sometimes as well, right? Because a lot of the times I make a decision and know what I want to do. And when I know I want to do something, it's kind of like that's the trajectory. That's where I'm going, right? But no matter what anyone else is saying. So when I graduated college and I was back, so I went to college in Missoula, Montana, hunted like crazy. I actually picked up a huge waterfowl addiction when I was up there. And not just big game. So I was hunting way too much. It's actually, I've said this before and I'll say it again, but I have no clue how I graduated college in 4 years. No idea. Somehow I did it. You know, probably quite a bit of looking over someone's shoulders when it came down to finals and things like that. But, you know, we'll, you know, let other people guess on how I did that. But when I came home, my family's always been in the casino industry. So in, you know, more detailed, not just casinos, but taverns. So bars that have video poker machines in them. Right. So that's a big industry here in Vegas. And I was working for a business that's what they did. And, you know, back to another side of my personality here is, I have a lot of respect for guys who can, you know, go work, grind, and facilitate a hobby on the side, right? Like, I think that's a very, you know, I can appreciate somebody who's capable of doing that. I find a lot of respect in that, somebody who can really go grind and do it. I've never been able to do something like that. Like, I've never been able to, like, all right, I'm going to go, you know, grind so I can do what I want with, you know, the resources I can accomplish with, you know, my work at this business. When I'm into something, like, I want it to be every second of every day, and usually I will try, you know, I'll do a lot of stupid things really to make it so that's all that, you know, revolves around my life. Like when I was in college with hunting, why I say I have no idea how I graduated. So I knew, I mean, really, I knew I was doing a shitty job at the business I was working for. And cause really all I wanted to do was be in hunting. Like I was dead set on being in the industry somehow, some way. Right. And, I was pretty good friends with Jason Hairston. I wrote him an email to go work for him. Really. I was asking for a job. I saved that email and reference it from time to time. It's hugely fucking embarrassing to go back and read because I was like 23 when I sent it, 24, and didn't really know what I was doing, but I was essentially asking for a job. And, you know, to my surprise, he answered, and him and I started talking, and I was going to go work for him, in Dixon, California. I was just trying to get myself involved in the industry any way possible. And at the time, my dad was like, "What the fuck are you doing? You know, like what is going on?" And I'm like, "Look, this is what I want to do, and I want to be in the hunting industry." And for one time in my life, I actually did listen because my family was bringing up some pretty good points of why I shouldn't, you know, just off and move to Dixon, California, and maybe think this thing through a little bit and not just, you know, jump on the first lily pad that that showed its face to me. And they made some good points. Well, during that kind of reset where I took my family's advice a little bit and started thinking things through a little more, you know, I was working at the business and, I was thinking through other parts of hunting that are, in my opinion, lacking. Right. So I'd always do my own hunting research. You know, through the years I was working at the business, I was always doing my own hunting research as well. And that's one of the ones that really stuck out to me. It's like just the breakdown in finding all of the opportunity, right? Like you know, probably better than anybody, Aaron, is back in the day, it was all like the ranked top units and, you know, all the, you know, the top fives, the top tens, all that bullshit. Well, like, I don't really care. Like I'm willing to go work harder than most on a hunt. It's like, I'm not looking for a top five hunt every, you know, 10 years, right? I'm looking for opportunity that I can go on every year and get to know units better and actually get to find little honey holes. And, you know, growing up in Nevada, we don't have a lot of tags. So like, I don't have a lot of protection in getting tags every year consistently for my home state. Right. You see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, Nevada is just not a top state for like that protection of, okay, I'm always going to have a tag. It's not like a Wyoming or a Montana or, you know, even a Utah for that matter, as being a resident of those states. So, you know, I had to do a lot of hunt research. Well, during this reset of actually taking advice for once and not being a complete idiot and just making brash decisions all the time, a guy that was working at the business with me, Chris Porter, we always make fun of him a little bit here around the office. He's the guy who's built this business with me. But he is unbelievably good. He is one of the smartest guys in the room that will ask the dumbest questions. And it's not on purpose. It's who he is. It's how he likes to understand things. And there's a lot of really good, there's a lot of beautiful things that happen with a guy like that because they draw out some of the most simple things that you're overlooking, right? Kind of like that paradigm shift that happens with a guy like him, because you know he's intelligent when you're talking to him. But the way he asks the questions, it really makes you like start at the base level. Like I'm talking as ground gets, like from the soil and up. And he was asking me all these questions back at when we were both working for the casino company. And he was asking them in such a 101 way, I really had to like think about how to answer because it was so simple. I was taking for granted, like I've been doing this my whole life. I've grown up hunting. I've grown up researching, hunting multi-states, all this stuff, just because of living in Nevada, like I said. And then when I was in Montana, I was hunting all the states surrounding when I was up there in college. And, you know, he started asking me these questions from such a base level that I really had to like think, okay, well, I need to figure out how to start this from the beginning so it'll make sense to him. Well, really what we started to do was uncover the lack of ability to find all of this, the opportunity in hunting, right? So like, okay, that's a top five unit. What about the unit next to it? Well, yeah, it's got the same ridge line of mountains that runs into it. So I would like, that's where I apply is because, you know, animals, right? Because he's never been around hunting before. So that's an arbitrary line that humans made on the mountain that breaks the two units. The animal has no fucking clue, right? So he's going to use topography the way any animal used topography, and he's going to use, you know, ridge lines and canyons and saddles, and yeah, that like those animals probably would make their way into that unit and, you know, the neighboring unit. And now I'm hunting every 2 years instead of every 10 years kind of a thing, right? I hope I'm making sense here and,
yeah,
you know, talking on the fly, but not sounding like a complete idiot to anybody who's going to listen to this one. But, so really that's how it started. Chris was asking me these questions and I was 20, 25 at the time, 26. And it really started to open my mind up to, you know, just the lack of information. And, you know, to the great benefit of timing is everything for a lot of people, right? Like, you could have the best idea ever, but if you're ahead of the time or behind the time, it doesn't really matter. And we just kind of hit the timing right as well of, you know, this is when Amazon's blowing up and Zillow's blowing up and all the travel websites are blowing up. So everything was going online. Like, there was just a massive transition of, you know, not dealing with travel agents anymore and dealing with Travelocity and not dealing with, you know, going to the store anymore and dealing with Amazon. And there was this huge, like, just behavioral transition from the consumer as a whole, that everything was moving online. And it was big benefit to us of, like, what we wanted to do and undertake of showing all opportunity. The only way we could do that was online, right? The power of software. So it was, we timed the transition of, you know, people getting off of talking face to face over the phone or using magazines or any of those things, and people migrating to, you know, the use of software and apps and things like that. So, you know, we had a lot of luck in the timing being right to build this online. And that's what we did, is because it was the only place possible. And that's what Chris Porter, the guy that I built the business with, he came from online poker background. So that's what he was doing for the casino business that we were both working for, was he was working for the online poker side of things. I was working on the tavern side of things. So he had very good online contacts. He had really good understanding of, like, okay, you need to hire a CTO. You need to hire, you know, an architecture guy. You know, all this shit that I have no, and still, honestly, to this day, don't have any clue. It's all over my head. I'm more so on the hunting and marketing side, but. We started putting a plan together with his understanding and him asking me the questions that, you know, I could answer to the best of my ability, which luckily I was, you know, I'd been around hunting a lot in a lot of different states and at a lot of different levels, from, you know, burning points on the quote unquote, you know, trophy units to going on opportunity hunts over the counter Arizona, things like that. And that's what I'd done my whole life. So him and I talking and teaming up, and we built a business plan, and next thing we knew, we were off and running. And this was 2013 is when we put the business plan together and kind of incorporated an LLC, got the brand name Go Hunt. We wanted something that was very aspirational and a verb, right? So you could use it as a brand. We wanted the brand to be its own thing and not just a product. Kind of like a UFC, right? UFC is a brand and it's a product. We wanted to emulate something like that. So we did a lot of soul searching on names and had some really dumb names that thank God we didn't get. And we honestly tried, but everything happens for a reason. And we landed on Go Hunt, incorporated that business and, you know, got the entity tied up, all that stuff. And then we launched the paid for product, like the way we would monetize the business, in 2015. So I was 27 years old when we launched. So luckily, I did it at a very young age, and that was a lot out of you know, having that what do they call it, like that adolescent stupidness to make risky decisions and not really think it through, you know, always having the stubbornness of kind of knowing what I want to do. So that's why it happened. It happened pretty fast.
Today, I wanted to talk about the Hoyt RX8 Ultra. This bow is so badass, animals will flip over dead in front of you with no effort whatsoever. You also could potentially pack on 20 to 30 pounds of muscle just from purchasing this bow. If you don't believe me, look at Evan Williams. He works for Hoyt, and he used to be 5'4" and 135 pounds. Now, 3 inches in height and at least 220 pounds of solid muscle. So check out the Hoyt RX8 Ultra at Hoyt.com. Let's talk about the SIG Zulu 6 image stabilizing binoculars. These things really excel when you're road hunting on a road with big potholes and can't really lock into the animal. And above and beyond that, if you're in a tree stand, giant deer's coming in, you're shaking like a dog shitting peach pits, they will lock in on that animal much better than standard binoculars. So check those out, the SIG Zulu 6. I can't recommend them enough. I'm sure some of you have heard me talk about Thor, my rifle from Viking Armament. I cannot suggest this rifle enough. I have actually never cleaned it, and it very rarely misses. Now, I can't promise that with some clients borrowing it. It doesn't have the mojo for everyone, but I would say it's got the 90% mojo. So hopefully if you come down hunting with me, you borrow the rifle, you might be in that 90%, but you could be in the 10s. So I suggest you actually get your own. So go to VikingArmament.com, get one ordered up. 300 PRC is on the way for me. Great guns, great people. As most of you know, I'm super close friends with the people over at Montana Knife Company, especially Josh Smith, the owner of Montana Knife. I was fortunate enough to partner up with them on the Jackstone knife. That knife is kind of a Canadian belt knife with a few different modifications, but a great knife. The good thing about that knife is if you don't ever kill anything, you will still look good with that on your belt. So that's an added bonus. So head over to Montana Knife, check it out, the Jackstone, or one of their other knives. It'll certainly help you pick up chicks, possibly, and definitely help you gain a few pounds in the gym. So going off of that, and then knowing, like, obviously, you know, I didn't have any background with business, you know, taking over Kafaru. And you, mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like you had a ton of experience in business. Sounds like probably more marketing and things like that. I know what I've fucked up. What would you say you fucked up the most in the beginning, looking back, where you'd like, man, this, you know, X and Y or A and B, whatever, would have saved me so much money if I knew what I was doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I had been around, I've always had a good mentor pool. Like I'm around guys who have done it. You know, I've had a good mentorship pool, but there is nothing like being in the fire and doing it yourself. Like, you can have all the mentors on planet Earth and you can try to, you know, you can try to incorporate what they're saying or take their advice to the best of your ability. But at the end of the day, you know, their struggles were theirs and yours are yours. Everyone's individualistic in that aspect, right? There's never a one-for-one comparison of like, yep, that's exactly the same as, you know, this mentor that I have. I'm going to go ask him how to deal with this, right? It's never the same. It's been done at different times, eras, with different people, with different problems, with different product sets, right? So there's a lot of variables. So you just have, you know, the best way I try to take mentorship and you know, try and make it make sense to what I'm doing. But a lot of the times, right, it doesn't necessarily work one for one. And I had no experience running a business. I was young. I was working for one and I thought I knew how it worked, but turns out I had no clue. I will tell you what I fucked up the most, hands down, without a question, is I kind of have a, when it comes, I'm a sport. So I played football, played baseball, played a lot of physical sports growing up. I kind of have that bully mentality because that's what you, right? That's kind of like, that's what you pick up at a young age, which I love about those sports, right? And honestly, Aaron, I would say, you know, looking from the outside in, you kind of have that bully mentality as well, where when you see a problem, you're just like, fuck it, I'm going head in, like, I'm taking it on, and I'll beat it, and we'll come out on the other side, right? And
I call it excessive compulsive over biting more than you can chew disorder, biting more off than you can chew disorder. I just made that shit up, but that is exactly what happens. Like, fuck it, we'll figure it out, just work harder, which works sometimes, but it can also make you old quick.
Head down. Let's face it head on. Let's go. Like, let's break down the wall. We'll get through this shit. Let's just go. Right. Everyone, failure is not an option. That's kind of a, you know, it was a saying around here for a while, burn the ships. Failure is not an option. We either have something or we don't. So let's go. Well, it's the age old saying, I've been doing this for 10 years now. We had Go Hunt for 10 years now. If I knew now, What I know now, if I had known it back then, man, if I would just sit down and not be young and dumb, if I would have just sat down and thought things through clearly and like had a clear vision of like, okay, I'm at point F and I'm trying to get to Z, right? I've made it from A to F. Now I'm trying to go from F to Z. What is the best way to get there and how can I do that as efficiently and capital efficiently as possible, right? So not just efficiently with my personal time, but also like the capital of the business, right? Because there's one guaranteed way to go out of business, and that's to run the airplane out of fuel, right? If you run the airplane out of fuel, you're landing wherever you are, and it's going to be a crash landing. So if I would have been smarter and more tactical with decision makings on what the end vision was, because I had a clear vision of what I wanted Go Hunt to be at the end, but I had absolutely zero vision of the steps to get it to that place. And I used kind of that, you know, your obsessive compulsion example, or, you know, my bully mental, you know, mental place. Like, we'll just break all the walls down. We'll just put our heads down and get there. Well, looking back, man, there were decisions where there were places we found ourselves in. And when we're just like, how in the fuck did we get here? And you look back and you're like, oh yeah, well, that's, you know, that's how we got here. Cause we literally didn't think about it any other way. Like we saw one path forward, and that was just hard work, when really, like, we definitely could have done that way more efficient with our time. And we just burned probably 10 times more money than we should have to get there.
Yeah. Been there, right? Done that. Yep. I'm having flashbacks now as you're saying it. Yep.
and it's such a deflating feeling to know, like, okay, well, now we gotta button things up, and we gotta get some cash flow back before we can reinvest. Because once this business took off, like, we've been essentially self-funded through the business. So it's like, you know, the only money you have to grow is the money that you can make, right? So it's then it becomes a real delicate dance of like, okay, we still want to grow, but we definitely used a lot more fuel than we should have to get to this point. So now we got to kind of button it up and rethink, make the machine a little bit more efficient, so we can have more money to throw it back into the business next month, you know?
Yeah. Well,
and let me would be the main takeaway.
Dive just into a couple things. And I try to explain this to my crew, cause you know, there's mistakes get made all the time. You know, when you have something new come on board, a new opportunity, a new technology, a new whatever, you also have potentially new fuck ups, right?
Oh yeah.
So the thing is at the end of it, if you didn't bankrupt the company and you know, when you come out the other side, I still would have liked it to have been easier. It's like touching a stove. You will never ever forget or do it again.
Yep.
Would you agree with or disagree with that?
Absolutely, 100% agree with that. And that's why, you know, that's why I say there's no replacement for finding yourself in the fire instead of listening to somebody else talk about the fire they were in, right? Like, once you're in it yourself and you do make it out, because then you get the confidence as well of like, okay, I did make it through something that potentially could have killed us. We did make it through, but also, I'm going to definitely be able to see that fire coming. And, you know, if I'm making too many stupid decisions, like, I'll be able to see that one coming in the distance where I didn't this time, because I've never seen it before. Right. And, it's definitely that stove thing where it's like, yeah, fuck that. I'm never touching that again. You know?
Well, and
you learn real quick.
I try to parallel some of this to the outdoors with people, and guys are like, hey dude, the first time when you thought, let's say you're on the Oregon coast or Oregon in big timber, and you get the bright idea to cut off the trail, you know, to save time to go bushwhack, and you learn that there's deadfall and stinging nettle and shit, and it just about fucking kills you and takes you four times longer than it would have if you just took the damn trail. Even though it wasn't a straight line and it was three times longer, it was three times faster. You never forget doing that in other hunting situations. And a good example, when I parallel, like in meetings, I'll bring that up of like, hey, is this going to take us three times the money? Even though, again, assessing all of that stuff. And when you deal with inventory and marketing and things like that, it's not always as clear and it's not always as clear and concise, I think, as some people might think from the outside looking in, like, oh, why did they do that? That's stupid. Oh, well, motherfucker, you hop in here and you try. And I bet, you know, it's interesting hearing, like, I've heard things about you guys, I'm sure you heard about us, where I'm like, no, that's not true, but like outside perception, I guess you could say.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And, you know, your backcountry hiking trail scenario, there is also no such thing as a shortcut, right? Us, the backcountry hunters, know it. And when you're in business long enough, you start to understand too. There is no shortcut. The only thing you're going to do on a shortcut is find yourself stuck, spending more time and energy than you would ever like to. And that's exactly the same in business. You're going to be stuck spending more time and more money than you ever would have wanted to if you would have just stayed on the fucking trail, right? And to the outside looking in, making dumb decisions. Yeah, you see that singular decision, right? So you watch companies all the time making a singular decision. But you know what you don't understand? What are their bank covenants, right? Like, what are their inventory covenants? What's their AP schedule look like? Like, sometimes you do have to make some dumb decisions from the outside looking in, because you're making some phenomenal decisions to keep the boat afloat with, you know, banking covenants and AP payment schedules and all this shit, right? So it's like, you have a lot of levers in a business, right? And any decision a consumer sees, that is one of possibly, you know, triple digit type variables that you're also making decisions on along the way. But to the consumer, they see the one that only faces them, which is entirely understandable, right? I do it all the time as well with other businesses I know nothing about, that are way bigger than I would ever be able to understand or even be able to manage a small arm of. But, you know, there's just so many variables with the decisions inside of a business that, you know, the one that is consumer facing is the one that gets, you know, either the praise or the flack. Well, there is a mountain of other variables that are tied to the exact same thread of that one consumer facing decision that are, you know, that are massively transformative to the business if you were to make a wrong one, and not transformative in a good way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'll, for people listening in, I'll add a little context to this. So, and I'll just bring up something we just did. So we had a lot of cash into the new frame. You know, you have molds, you have R&D. You know, we actually had one frame we were going to come out with, and we actually burnt $100,000 of them to come out with, and you might have slapped the fuck out of me. It might only be a 5% increase or improvement. It was actually Anders' call, but Anders is like, this other one's better. Like, fuck it. We're going to take a black eye. But then there's a lot of capital into that frame that you're not selling yet. So when you come out with that, people are like, oh, why didn't you have seven other bags? Or, well, this was really fucking expensive. And you need to keep some cash in the bank, because with today's economy, like, you don't want to get rid of all of it, even though you're probably going to make a lot of money with that cash. You have to be safe about it. And that's where I see people are like, hey, why aren't they doing this? They like money. There's probably a good reason. It may be coming, but just because you think it's easy to do, or you don't see the big picture, you got to be smart with what you're doing. Inventory is another nightmare. Bad inventory decisions. Yeah. I think we both suffered from that and learned our lesson. Like,
absolutely.
And that's a skull crusher too. Like, just crush your soul where you're like,
what?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, in the inventory sits, right? It doesn't make any money while you have it. It doesn't make money until you sell it. So, I mean, yeah, when we, you know, forked out $1 million in a bad inventory decision, and we're sitting on $1 million in our warehouse, looks like that is, I look at that as cash. So I look out in my warehouse and I'm like, okay, there's $1 million in one of 3,000 inventory pieces. There's $1 million sitting right there. I could have used that cash somewhere else a lot more efficiently, right? Like, and I need to start recouping some of that cash until I can go make this other decision. Right. To your example, to your point of, you know, it costs a lot of money and you don't make money yet. I mean, technology is the king of that, right? So we spent multi-millions of dollars in maps and in building our app, right? I shouldn't even say maps, because it's not a map at all. Like, it's a hunting app, right? It, now of what it sits today, but obviously we had to take it down in chunks, and maps is what we used first, as far as the app goes. But we, 2 years of building and multi-millions of dollars before we see a dime that comes back to the business from that specific product we're building, right? This app. And so now we're living off of what we've previously built, which is, you know, our desktop, you know, filtering draws, all that stuff on the desktop. We're living off of that to feed us and our families, make payroll, all this shit, and build this thing that for 2 years has not made us a single dime of, right? So there's a lot of decisions in that of like, okay, how do we protect the business to make sure we're still paying our guys, right? We're still putting food on the table. How do we put enough into maps that we, you know, we need to get this thing live at some point, but we also can't run the plane out of fuel. So like you're constantly watching that fuel gauge of, you know, how much more can we put in this month? How much do we need to protect it? How much do we need to keep in the bank in case of a, you know, rainy day and the economy blows up, which it has over the last 4 years. So, right, you start making all these decisions, and the consumer is seeing the, like you said, well, why didn't you come out with, you know, why is it just maps? Why didn't you come out with everything in the app? Well, because that would have been another year longer and another $1 million that we would have made no money off of, where instead we can launch it with just maps, start recollecting some of that money, right, and start using the money that we're driving off of that new product. And that new product investment, we can now start driving some ROI on, where we can start spending it one for one as a reinvestment into that individual product, instead of the foundation of the business trying to have to support, you know, the new builds and the new R&Ds and the new things we want to go do. Right? Am I making sense there?
Yeah, and I will add, one of the things that this takes is people a lot fucking smarter than I am, and I can't speak for Lorenzo, but I will, and smarter than him. I would say you and I both are geniuses at marketing. We're very good at that. We're very good at judging the room and the you know, the what's out in the ocean of what do the fish want to eat. We're good at that.
Yep.
But dude, when it comes to like operations, like thank God I have Anders, because I'm fucking not right at that. Like operations forecasting, and you've got like Porter. You've got people for that.
Oh, thank God I have Porter. I got Porter, and I got a kid named Scott Christensen on the finance and HR side. Without those two guys, I would have been, you know, broke with no business and back in the casino industry as a failure at hunting. is what would have happened.
It seems like I've got a super good crew, you know, here, and it seems like you do as well. And the one thing I've had at times people not argue with me about, because I have a young crew, you know, and we're all obviously building each other up, learning things together, is I will take loyalty and dedication and work ethic over skill any day of the week, because the skill will come. If you have the other three, skill will come. Where if you come in with a ton of skill, but you're a fucking cock and you're not a good team player, it does me no good. And I don't know if you look at it that way or you look at it differently.
So I was real fortunate on that specific topic, where one of the mentors I had the ability of getting his ear whenever I wanted. He was always very clear with me in the beginning of you want to choose enthusiasm and work ethic as who you want to hire way before you choose talent.
Yeah.
And he had built and gone public with a couple different businesses. I mean, he's done, you know, he's done what everyone's dream is, right? Like he's been there and done it. And his point to it is, when you bring in talent, you bring in ego. When somebody is just has pure talent, there's nothing but ego there. And, you know, every business on the inside as well as the outside has its personality, right? It's got its family dynamic within the walls of the business that you're building and running. So there's a family dynamic here at Go Hunt, right? And when you bring in talent, you're bringing in somebody with ego. Whereas if you bring in somebody with work ethic and enthusiasm, not only will the talent come, but they will be excited about the talent that they're gaining. And they will learn the talent that is exactly conducive to the business that they're in, which is an individualistic thing again, like I was talking about before, you know, with everything everything's one of a kind in business. There's never a one-for-one carbon copy of how things happen and decisions to be made. So it's like they not only do they learn the talent, they learn the talent that is exactly the DNA of the business itself. So the talent becomes, you know, lockstep with the family dynamic of the business, right? So he was always very clear with me. Like when you're looking through people, you obviously need somebody who is capable and has the ability to do the job you're asking the day that they come in, right? But instead of choosing somebody with 20 years experience and thinking they're the best on planet Earth, choose the guy with 5 years experience who has the most enthusiasm and the highest amount of work ethic. And that's what we've done along the way. And holy shit, thank God for that piece of advice before getting into this thing.
Yeah. And I'm sure people ask you questions all the time about the business and what you want to, you know, even people about getting in the industry or they, whatever, small businesses, decisions. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, don't fucking ask me. Like, I'm the wrong guy to answer that one. And then other ones I'm like, oh yeah, I can help you out. But like when you, I would say anybody that's looking at, you know, like, has the entrepreneur kind of blood DNA. One, I would say hire somebody to keep you between the mayo and the mustard so you don't go off the deep end where you got somebody every now and then being like, yep, dude, that's a fucking horrible idea. But also, you know, we'll promote and defend and back you up when needed. But I mean, surrounding yourself with like a good crew is so important. And I don't think people realize that where they're like, I've got a bunch of really smart guys, we're going to dive in. If they don't get along, if they're, you know, it's important to have a tight-knit unit.
Yeah, and that's where being self-aware and self-reflective as an entrepreneur is also extremely important, is being able to look in the mirror and saying, okay, I know I'm not good at this, and not only am I not good at it, I will cause more problems than add solutions because my ego is what's going to come in to try and solve these things, or, you know, the bully in me is going to try to solve that instead of, you know, the tactical mindset, right? So I know and I'm very real with myself of what I am bad at. And that's why I get along with Porter, is because when he steps up and puts me in my place, I don't have an egotistical comeback because I know I'm bad at that. I do need to shut up and listen, right? Like, he is in the lead now. Like, he's better at this. I need to shut the fuck up, listen, and get out of the way. Right. So it's knowing, but I know what I am good at, and I know where I do bring value. And that is where I will stand up and hold my ground because I know it's right. And that's where guys like Porter and Scott, you know, they know that that's the value I bring. And so it becomes this very respectful, and kind of ever growing relationship because everyone is capable of self-reflection and, you know, self-admission of, you know, ego stepping in the way or, you know, stupidity and just wanting to be right, stepping in the way. And, it's a very, very important thing with bringing guys around you. Cause do you watch sports at all?
Off and on.
Yeah. So I'm a huge sports fan. Like, I think the locker room atmosphere is like the single greatest thing on planet Earth. And I feel like if everyone could experience a true locker room, it's like, it's as good as it gets. Right. But that's, you see it in sports all the time where you do nothing but just bring in all the top talent, right? And then the first thing you hear a coach say is, oh, now they just need to learn how to play together. Like, yeah, I have all the right players, but they need to learn how to play together. One out of 1,000 times will those players be able to figure out how to play together, right? Because you brought in nothing but talent. That doesn't get you anywhere. You need people who have, you know, the ability to self-reflect and self-admit of where their strengths and weaknesses are, and then place people around them that, you know, will make up for where they're lacking. And then also on the vice versa, when the other guy, where he's lacking, that his, you know, sidekick needs to be able to pick it up for him. I mean, 99 out of 100 times, that's where you see the winning team. It's like the Chiefs right now. I mean, fuck, Andy Reid is the goddamn pro at that. And so was, you know, Bill Belichick in his day with Tom Brady, right? Like, how do we bring guys in that lift the weaknesses and you know, add to the strengths kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you asked about sports, I used to be, you know, an athlete, you know, in high school, and then watched as I got out. And then kind of with the whole way the world has gone in the last few years is when I kind of was like, all right, I can't do the sport thing anymore. But I 100% agree with the mentality, the locker room mentality, the team building. One person can change the entire, whether that's a sports team, a business, one person can crush souls in a negative way and just bring the just mood down. And one person can also bring that mood up. And
exactly,
people do not realize that sometimes.
And it literally can come down to one individual. And that's why I think the locker room atmosphere is fascinating. I think it is absolutely correlative and reflective of privatized business life as well. When we walk into the walls of Gohan, I view it as our locker room. Like when we walk in here, everyone's minds should change. Your mental state should change, right? Like, I don't want you the same person at home as you are at work. You should be a dad and a family man and a, you know, a husband or whoever you are at home. Be that when you're home. But when you walk into the walls, you know, you're the family of Gohan. So it's like, it's that same thing when you walk into the walls of a locker room, like you think something is different, right? You're not at home anymore. You are now going to battle with the boys, you know, and going to try to figure this thing out. That's kind of the culture that we, you know, that I would like to think that, you know, we've kind of instilled here and what I hope we've instilled here. But, and it, like you said, with the individual thing, I mean, one cancer in the locker room, like most people who haven't played team sports and haven't been in a locker room, they don't understand. It literally can be one person, one cancer in the locker room, and that entire team falls apart. Doesn't matter how good they were. Doesn't matter what they were doing. Like one person can tear the walls down. And to the flip side of that, you bring one person in and it can change everything and take you to a level internally that you never thought was possible. Right. And that's where enthusiasm comes in. Like that mentor I had telling me is, you know, enthusiasm is that's everything, right? People being enthusiastic about the vision, the belief, where you want to take it, enthusiastic about the decision-making, you know, the brand, that's where enthusiasm is the most important thing.
I've been fortunate to work with many great companies in the outdoor industry, but the people over at Born Primitive Outdoor are definitely on the top of the list. All veterans donate a bunch of money into veterans organizations. And other than Bear Hanlon's hair, which he probably should get cut, I can't really say anything negative about him. Bruno, who also works for Born Primitive Tactical, he has no hair. So I'm wondering, maybe you guys email in, donate some money. We can cut Bear's hair, glue it on Bruno. Kurt, on the other hand, perfect hair. Check him out, Born Primitive Outdoor. Anybody that's followed along with me for the last couple years knows I've really been using and promoting Spartan Forge, the mapping software. The owner, Bill, who I must say is a pipe-hitting dork, does all of the coding and things like that for Spartan Forge. He's also a military veteran. If you get lost really easy, I also suggest this. They have a Blue Force tracker, so maybe I can come find you. If you get drunk and can't find your way home, you can hit the beacon. There's a lot of positive things, not just about hunting and weather, about Spartan Forge. So check it out. Amazing product, owned by veterans, good dudes. I'm sure some of you have seen the speakers that are in my garage, where it's on video or if you've come over to the house, but those are Demerbox speakers. They're waterproof, very durable. It's basically a Pelican case with speakers inside. The charge lasts for a long time. Sound quality is amazing. Again, waterproof. I throw it in my truck, keep them in my garage, throw them outside when I'm working out and shooting. But a product that I can stand behind, as well as the people that own and operate the company. So Demerbox, take a look. So when to get off of the business side just a little bit, because I think people probably got the general gist of this, is the hunting side of things. Obviously, I knew your dad, the way it was put to me initially, because I didn't know, like, initially when you started, who you were. But I knew your dad's name, and I think it was somebody said, shit, his dad owns half the Vegas Strip or something to that.
Yeah.
But your dad has done well down there. I don't know that he owns half the Vegas Strip, but he has done very well in that area.
You just didn't.
Yeah.
You were just a hunter at a young age and did not. You never told me this. I had just heard basically you wanted to get the fuck out of that business and work in the outdoors, whatever way you could. That was paraphrasing from a friend of yours. But I was like, I wonder, was that what it was? You're like, it's great having all this money. This is a cool thing. We got, you know, the dad's doing great, but I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I want to do something in the outdoors.
Yeah. 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 My dad has done extremely well, and that's, you know, not just him that I'm around. I'm also around a lot of his colleagues that I can bend the ear of. And that's kind of that mentorship pool I'm speaking of, which I've always been so fortunate to have. And then just to have my dad as successful as he is and as much as he's done, he does not own half the strip, to be clear. There's only one company that owns half the strip. That's MGM. And, but he owns Stratosphere, which is one property on the strip, and a couple other, regional casinos out in kind of the smaller places in Nevada, like Pahrump and Laughlin, and some of those bars and taverns, like I was talking about. Right. And I don't get me wrong. I love that business. It's an amazing business, and I'm very close to my family. Every day I wake up, I cannot believe who my family is and how close we are as a family, right? Because you hear a lot of the times, you know, it doesn't always go that way when you're talking about big business within a family, right? And I am fortunate every day that, you know, I talk to my dad, my brother, all of them daily, right? And we all support each other, and we're all pulling for each other. But when I was working there, I have an older brother. He's 3 years older than me, right? You don't need two quarterbacks on a team. Well, you can't have two starting quarterbacks on a team, right? So I'm either the backup quarterback or some other position that I don't want to play, right? Call it, I don't know if that's the ego in me or the aspirations in me, but I just, you know, I don't want to be a backup, and I don't want to be a different position. I've never wanted to be either of those. And also, you know, everything happens for a reason. I do believe also, I can't be in a position where I'm grinding to go facilitate what I would rather be doing. My brother, I have so much respect for my brother, what he does and how hard he works to facilitate the few times he gets to be involved in hunting or go hunting and those things. It's very admirable to watch somebody be able to do that, where I've never had that thread in me. I've never been able to do that. Like if I'm not fully into something and I'm not fully enthusiastic about it, my mind will be off in la la land, daydreaming, thinking, you know, ideations of things, and like I'll be a wreck. Like my mind will just be in the clouds all day, and ultimately I will just suck at my job, which is what I was doing. You know, I was facilitating all the third party relationships we had in these bars and taverns, and I sucked at my job because I was always daydreaming about how to be in the hunting industry. It was just it's where my mind always was. It was either about hunting or about being able to work in the industry that talks about hunting, that makes goods for hunting, that tries to make hunters' lives better, just everything revolving around, you know, that part of life. And so, yeah, I mean, but the secondhand message that was handed to you about me just saying, fuck it, I'm getting out of, I got to get into this whatever way possible, that is not wrong. That is, I mean, I was going to make the decision to just, you know, for my life to be work life, you know, free time, all that stuff. I wanted it to be around hunting. So that's where the idea of going to work for Jason came into the picture. And that's where, thankfully, my dad mentored me in a great way, saying, no, like, fucking sit down and think about this a little better. Like, this isn't the time of your life to, like, you need to really think through this. And obviously it led to something a lot bigger and better. So, you know, that's basically how it happened. And to, you know, to the point of my family, right? Like I have an insane amount of respect for my mom and dad, not only for you know, what they've built together in a business, but also how they've raised me, my brother, and my sister. You know, it's kind of the only like public example of this is kind of, it's Shaq and his kids, right? Where he basically says, you know, I'm rich, my kids aren't rich, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
My family is very much like, hey, listen, this is what I do. And this is what I have. This is no one else's, right? Like, you guys are all going to go on your own paths, figure out your own shit, right? Like, if you want to work here and work your way up, all for it. And that's what my brother has done. And like I said, you don't need two starting quarterbacks. So I'm like, all right, well, I need to figure out my path. So let's go fucking head first into hunting and figure this thing out. So it was a lot of, not necessarily forced, but some decisions were already made for me, right? So it made the decision a little easier to kind of just go full bore. But, you know, even if I was the oldest son, I'm pretty sure I'd be sitting in the same situation.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I don't want to keep you on for too long, but
no worries.
Some people would say something like, well, of course he was able to do that. His parents are rich. But yep. That money is not mutually exclusive, and I may have said that incorrectly, of making a success of yourself. So let's just pick a few people in the industry, yep. And I'll pick kind of a list, and then you can be like, yeah, I agree with that. So we'll just say Levi Morgan, who's a professional archer, Cam Haynes.
Yep.
I'm going to leave myself out of it. Remy Warren and Steve Rinella.
Okay.
To my knowledge, none of them came from money.
Correct.
And they're all doing pretty damn good. So what did they all have in common? And this is what I really try to force upon people that are in a younger than me of to succeed, right? It's not going to come fast, but if you become, let's say somebody goes, you go work for Lorenzo, right? Let's say you work for me, you fucking hate the winter and you want to go live in good weather. So I would say, all right, well, depending upon what he's got you doing, excel at the highest level of what you're currently doing. Easy enough. Better yourself, yep. In the direction for the job you want tomorrow. Meaning, if you want to go out and be like Brady, right? You want to go kill shit, become an amazing photographer. Get good at talking in front of the camera. Become an amazing hunter. Someone who's good at tuning a bow. Someone that knows gear, right? Learn all of those things. You may be putting shit in boxes in 2024 at 22 years old, but you are training for the job of 2028, and I guarantee someone will see how well you're doing and you will eventually end up in that position. If you like, I didn't know, I had to learn how to take photos. I had to, you know, all of those things. And same Cam can't take a picture where the fuck, but he can run and he obviously got good at killing shit. Right. I mean, he did something right.
Absolutely.
So what, I mean, throw it out there. Cause you got a ton of people that work for you and you took a risk. Now, people may not believe you took a risk, but from what I understood, your dad wasn't going to totally cut you off, but it was a big risk for you to do what you did instead of following, like you said, your brother. So what would you tell a young person? Would you give them the same advice I did, or what would you add?
Yeah, it would be the same. It would be the same thread of advice. No question, right? It's show up on time, work as hard as you possibly can, and be willing to take on more than what your job is. Right. Those are the three ways to get ahead. And they're so fucking simple. Right. And, you know, look, like you said, people, I'm sure there's a pile of them that are, you know, fucking must be nice. Of course you made it. Your family's wealthy. I mean, yeah. What am I supposed to say to that? Like, yeah, it has been very nice to be in this life that I was born into with the mentorship I have and all of those things. But look, no one's ever going to give me the credit as somebody who came from nothing, right? And I am completely good with that. I don't give a shit. Doesn't bother me at all. I really don't care what anyone has to say about it. Because I know what I've done for myself. And you're right. At the end of the day, I got to do things that make I got to be proud of myself in some way, right? I can't just sit back and say, yeah, you know, my family's super wealthy, so here we go, you know, and I'll just let me live life. And also, I don't necessarily have access to, you know, what everyone's different, right? Like, I don't have access to go start blowing money and hanging out and buying statewide tags and doing all kinds of crazy shit, right? So somebody's going to say it's easy for me to say, which, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to argue with that, but I can tell you, if you're trying to get ahead, showing up on time, being enthusiastic about the work and working as hard as you possibly can, and then being the first one to raise your hand when something needs to be done within a business that you don't have a direct hire for, because that happens all the time, right? Like you're always understaffed in a business. I don't care how big of a business you are, maybe not Facebook or some shit like that, but like for the most part, if you're in a business, that business is going to be understaffed somewhere, somehow, with something that comes up. Be the first one to raise your hand when your job doesn't explicitly state and you're not being paid for that extra work. Be the first one to raise your hand and take it on. And, and over-deliver, right? As easy as that is to say. But when you're the guy that's raising your hand to take on the work that needs to be done, that starts to stand out. It really starts to stand out. And that's Scott. I'll give you a direct example of this. Scott Christensen, he came to work for us for me and Chris as an intern, right? He was so good as an intern about being enthusiastic, about listening, about being capable of the things we were giving him, that we didn't want to let him go. So we hired him as director of kitchen cleanliness. That was literally his job title for an amount I don't want to say because I'm not proud of, but we had to make an offer, right? Like we had to say, hey, we don't want you. I'm going to give you guaranteed pay, even though you're still in school. We obviously can't pay you very much, but like the second you graduate, we want you here. We want you here as much as you can be while you're still in school right now. Like now that you're going back in semester, but it's any free time we want you in the office. He's enthusiastic. He's great. He brings the entire vibe of the office up, right? His full-time role for us was director of fridge cleanliness, basically like overseeing the
break room,
you know, the break room, right? Like ordering stuff for us, making sure we were never running out of stock, taking care of the bathrooms, things like that. That's literally where he started. He is the CFO of Go Hunt now. He's 29 years old. 28 or 29 years old. But that's what he showed up. He was enthusiastic and he always took on a job. He always took on work that was needed, but we didn't have a direct hire for. Right. And now he's CTO or CFO rather of Go Hunt.
So, I mean, adding to that, and obviously, you know, I agree. And, you know, I have an amazing crew here around me with kind of the same type of stories and work ethic. And it's just a pleasure, you know, dealing with that. But the value, and I mean, some people bash on Dana White, but he had made a statement the other day, like as a kid nowadays, like you should crush the world in today's day and age by just working your ass off. Would do it where, rewind, that may not have been the case 20 years ago, 10 years ago. Like,
no,
I don't know what the minimum wage when you were a kid was, but it was like $3 an hour when I was a kid, and I was worked like a fucking government mule, like manual labor government mule. And so if you still have that, when I say that, meaning like I'll bring up Kenneth and Dan and Amanda because they're the kind that will do what I don't give a fuck if I ask them to move my couch and help me pick up dog shit or something at work. They're always willing to help, and I try to return that favor. That never goes unnoticed ever by an employer.
Yep. That's what you just said about those types of jobs. That was Scott Christensen. I'd moved the house. Gail was the first person to ask me if I needed help. Scott Christensen. First person to show up at my house to help me move. Scott Christensen. Like it's exactly the way it goes.
No, that's cool. Well, we're getting close to an hour, man. Kind of let pretty much everybody knows what you guys offer, but let everybody know what's what. Cause, and I know you guys offer some newer stuff now with the mapping softwares, you know, whatever. So,
yep. Yeah. So we've had a transformative last 2 years. And actually, where we sit today, this, cause season for us starts December. That's kind of like our annual calendar is basically middle of December back through middle of December, because that's when Alaska is the first one to kick off, right? Middle of December. So, and that's where our DNA is in finding the opportunities within hunting. Like, you want to go hunting, you want to hunt a certain species, you want to hunt a certain state, you want to get a tag. That's what we do. That's where we start. And that's obviously where every hunter starts, is like, okay, where am I going hunting? What tag am I getting? That's where we've always, like, that's our bread and butter right there. And it's been on desktop primarily, right? Over the last 2 years, we've been really transformative into bringing this entire business onto the phone, right? We want to be where consumers want to be. And I'm, you know, I feel like an idiot it's taken me this long, because I hate to say it, but I'm damn near addicted to my phone. And I think if anybody was realistic with themselves, they'd say the same thing. I'm always on it. I'm on my phone way more so than I'm in front of a computer. And so we've really put a lot of work into bringing the entire power of the product of Insider and filtering and draws and finding hunts and opportunities. We've brought that all into the app now. So we, you know, the way I see it, and fuck, call me egotistical or not, but like, yeah, we're the first ones to build a hunting app, right? It is from start to finish, from finding hunts, finding the opportunities through filtering, find if you are carrying points and states and using draws, or if you just want OTC and, you know, over the counter guaranteed tags, or you want guaranteed draws, things like that. You have to find a tag first. Then you get into the e-scouting, then you get into the gear, then you get into the actual hunt itself, offline maps and waypoints and all that. We have brought the entire app together now, where it's start to finish. So, you know, this time of year, we got Colorado deadline, April 2nd. You know, Montana deer and elk is today. Deadline is today. It's literally no better time to be using the product. I mean, ourselves, shameless plug here, but I don't really give a shit, because it's true. I mean, we're on it for hours a day right now, trying to make our decisions, right? Nevada's open, our home state. Been doing a lot of research there, and I'm about ready to put in Montana right now and Colorado when I get off the phone. So, you know, finding the opportunities, finding the hunts you want to go on, species, all that stuff within the app, all at the palm of your hand now. And, yeah, it's been transformative for sure. And it's pretty fucking exciting to see where it's at.
Gotcha. So you have that, and then you have the internet store and the mapping software. Those are the prime.
The store is the only thing that hasn't been brought into the app yet. And that's soon to come. But obviously, you know, there's a priority list. This is one of those, right? The consumer, why don't you bring the store into the app too? Man, I really want to, but you got to follow a priority list, and things come as they come. But yeah, we have an e-com store as well. And that was honestly born out of, for us, you know, we do a lot of marketing and films, and, you know, we got guys in the office like Trail and Brady who are, you know, they're pretty well known and they know their shit. Well, we were being asked so many times about, why are you using those boots and that backpack and those, you know, that tent or that sleep system, all this stuff. We were being asked so much about that. We're like, man, we should just bring this in to what we offer, so it's easy for the consumer to go make those purchases when, you know, they're engaging with us, either the business or us individually, like me, Trail, or Brady. And then we took a page out of the casino book about loyalty, and you know, the more you spend, the more you get back, right? So we have, you know, one of a kind loyalty program that is directly reflective of the casino industry. But however much you spend in the store, because we know hunting is expensive, right? Like, I hate how expensive hunting is, but it is what it is, and it's something that none of us are ever going to change, because it just, that's what it needs to be, right? That now you're getting into a whole other conversation about support of the animals and conservation and all that, but it is expensive, right? And there's no way around it. So what we do on the back end is like, look, you want to buy some gear. I know the gear is expensive too, because it has to be technical and it has to be specialty goods, because obviously what we're doing is, you know, part survival, part hunting, part mechanic, part marksman, part butcher. We got a lot of skill that we have to account for when we hit the hills and go into the backcountry, or even the front country for that matter. So we need a lot of shit, right? We carry a lot of stuff. And our way to give back is like, man, we want it to be more, affordable, if that's the right word, where if you're buying a backpack, we want to give you money back so you can go buy something else in the store as well. So we have this loyalty program of, kind of the more you spend, the more you get back kind of a thing. Cause we want your money going towards, we want the consumer's money going towards, tags and applications and buying hunting licenses. That's where the magic of, the longevity and protection and conservation of hunting, that's where it is in hunting license sales and, non-resident applicants, things like that. That's how we make sure we have, this thing we called hunting when my sons are old enough to do it. Right. So that's a platform we at least can see ourselves helping.
No, for sure. And, with everything that you guys offer, and obviously, are growing and expanding, it is kind of a one-stop shop. And it's funny, if I Google, I was Googling some crazy shit the other day, titanium cup or something. And, you pop up and then I go down a deep, dark, wormhole of what all shit does GoHunt carry. Because I get everything free for them. All right. I don't have to pay for much. So I'm generally not shopping, but sometimes I'll get them for reviews. And other times it's just for my own personal info. So when people ask, I'm like, oh, just go to GoHunt or, whatever. Cause it simplifies my life. Cause I want to send 17 links to 17 different stores for somebody to go buy their shit. It takes me forever. So it is handy.
Yeah.
Cause you guys do
pain in the ass.
Oh fuck. It's horrible. But you guys have a big inventory. So that makes it way simpler. So.
Yeah, big inventory, and it was also to solve for that headache too, because I was finding myself, right? Like, okay, I'm going to go to, here in town, we got a Bass Pro, we got a Sportsman's Warehouse, and we have REI. I would literally have to hit all three of those before going on a hunt. Like, I would have to hit Sportsman's for ammo, I'd have to hit Bass Pro for kind of like the ancillary gear, and then I would have to hit REI for all the backcountry food. It's like, what am I doing? Like, why don't we let's put this all underneath one roof.
Yeah. No,
that's what we did.
I was gonna say it's handy for me. So just for the advice side, but dude, I appreciate you hopping on, man. I don't want to take up any more of your time. We didn't talk about hunting at all, but I think if people hear that shit all the time. I think this was probably better overall for people to hear. Cause we can talk about hunting anytime, but, with the questions I get, the hunting ones are like, it's easy figured out. But business, though, when people come across, very rarely do you meet somebody like you, I guess is what I'm saying, where you have some good advice and a unique perspective, and you employ a lot of people. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you.
No problem, of course. Well, man, go slap everybody in the shop for me. Give Brady a hug. And, dude, I appreciate it. Everybody go check out Go Hunt.
Yeah, will do. Thank you.
All right, man, take it easy.
Okay, you as well.